This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gillespie looking to throw it in. Gets it up top to Queen. Dribbling left. Big step down the lane. Runner for the win. Baked it in! He baked it in! He baked it in! And Maryland has won! Maryland is going to the Sweet 16!
Yeah, they are. Thursday night, 7:39 tip for the Terps in San Francisco. They get the number one seed, Florida. You'll hear the game right here on your home for Maryland basketball, the Team 980. Johnny Holiday, Chris Knocke start the pregame show at 7 o'clock. Kevin Willard scheduled to join the show at 11:25. Joining me right now, one of my favorites, John Fanta from Fox, from everywhere covering the sport, the Field of 68. He's been doing a lot of sideline work during the tournament. What did you think of the Terps on Saturday against, I thought, a very well-coached and a much better than anybody thought Colorado State team? But give me your assessment of the game that they just won and the one coming up.
Well, Kevin, that was a Colorado State team that came in red hot to make the tournament, and winning the Mountain West tournament really to punch their ticket. I mean, that's a team that had won 11 in a row. And anytime you're going up against that with veteran players and Nick Clifford, it wasn't going to just be a cakewalk, especially when you're in Maryland's shoes and you're trying to break through. Program hasn't made the Sweet 16 since 2016. Kevin Willard has been a head coach for 18 years, Kevin, and he's had a lot of tremendous wins and outstanding moments and some championship moments as well, but he had never made the Sweet 16. And I thought early on the weight of that, you could feel it. You could feel it with Maryland, their body language. They were tight. They wanted it so bad. And I thought the defining play of the game was with 5 minutes to go and Maryland's down 5, and Jacoby Gillespie just says, you know what, enough. And he buries a 3, and then they get a stop, and he delivers an assist for a transition bucket to tie the game. When they did that, I said, they're going to win this game. They are going to find a way to win this basketball game with leadership like that. At times, you know, I think that Kevin would say this, like at times, ballers have to ball. Guys got to go and find a way to get theirs. And in that moment, Gillespie did that. And I just thought that the way things went down to the wire, I mean, that's a game that nobody deserved to lose. Jalen Lake hits an incredible 3. But then for Queen to knock down that shot, Kevin, I think he is one of the only, if not the only player, Derek Queen, who can make that shot look as easy as it did. And it's not easy. That's a very difficult shot. What a moment for Derek Queen. He embodies what Maryland is about, what the DMV's about, all of that. He elects to stay home. He produces a historic moment, and it's a magical win for the Terrapins. And now they turn their attention to a Florida team that, Kevin, as we'll dive deeper, had a lot of trouble with UConn on Sunday, and frankly could have just as easily lost that game. But it's survive in advance. And to the Terrapins, I say this, that team is mentally tough. You don't find a way in that game unless you are. An incredible ride continues, and if I'm a Terps fan, you're savoring this every single second of it. You deserve it.
John Fanta joining us. Follow John on X on Twitter, @John_Fanta. Average minds, John, think alike. I pointed that out yesterday. In fact, it started with Gillespie forcing the turnover on Clifford at the defensive end when they had a chance to go up 7 or 8, and then hitting that three, just massive, part of the game. You and I were texting back and forth after it, and I know that you put a video together that went viral on social media. Tell everybody how you answered the question, did he or didn't he travel Derek Queen on the game winner?
He didn't travel, and there's no world where that ever gets called as a travel. This notion that it even was or close to it is ridiculous. He is in motion, and he knocks down a shot that is a normal basketball play. Nothing about it says travel. And Kevin, it's easy for the cameras and people to slow things down and show the possibility of a third step, or in super slow-mo, it looks like he got away with an extra. I'm just telling you, Kevin. You're in the same boat. I watch hundreds of games, hundreds, if not thousands now, hundreds per year. There's no world where that's called travel. That official would be jeopardizing the game if he jumps in there and calls it. Let the players decide the game, and it was not a travel. There's no rule that says it should have been. The backlash is from people who slow things down and say that looks like one. There are so many sequences late in games, but during any, that's not a travel 4 minutes into a game. And so when people say like, oh, you just don't call it there, you don't call it anywhere.
No.
So the game has changed where yes, at times, players are in motion, and it looks like, because of the athleticism that a lot of players possess, it looks like it could be perceived as one. There's no world where that's a travel. Enough is enough. Nico Medved didn't complain and rip the officials apart. Then you shouldn't rip and complain the officials apart. But people like to be upset at something every time, and it was not a travel.
Yeah, John, anybody that's watched basketball for the last quarter century knows that isn't a travel. It's never been called as a travel. You'll see, I mean, traveling doesn't get called enough, period, but usually it's at the beginning of a catch where there is a significant shuffle before somebody gets started, not once you go into that, you know, driving and shooting motion. You know, I don't know if you caught this or not, but they missed something in the first half of this game that was an egregious miss. There was a blatant, flagrant elbow thrown by Neat Clifford, who, by the way, is a hell of a player, at Jordan Geronimo that connected. They never looked at it. Never even looked at it. I don't think it would have been a flagrant two in an NCAA tournament game, but it would have been perhaps in a regular season game, a toss the player from the game situation. Bare minimum, it was flagrant one, two free throws in the ball. Did you catch that?
I did see that, and they did miss it. And you know what? I'll say this. The officials are getting evaluated right now, too. And when they miss those types of things, they hear about it after the game. And guess what? That determines whether or not they make it to the next round. Here's my advice to any team, any coach, anybody. Don't leave it in the hands of the officials. Because if you're in a close game, they're not perfect. And mistakes can be made. You know, we've seen it time and again in this tournament. And, you know, I talk with some refs about this year, Kevin. I think you'd be intrigued by this because, yes, you're right. They missed that on Clifford there over the weekend. A lot of the refs have told me here this year, they're like, look, we know that we're not, you know, 20 years old running up and down the floor. We get it. We know we're older, and we probably, it takes us a little bit more time to get up and down the floor than the players. But one of the things that an official said to me was, he's like, you know, when you combine how fast the game is moving with how much an instant replay or a phone could theoretically slow things down, he's like, I'm 100% when I'm on my couch trying to make a call, too, and I look back at replay. He goes, our only goal is to get it right, but it's becoming extremely hard to officiate a game now. And I don't disagree. I mean, and I'm not trying to throw a pity party for the officials. They get paid a lot of money to do these games. But when a couple of officials have admitted that to me this year, with the speed in the game combined with our era of media being able to dissect any sequence of the game, yeah, that's why we see a lot of the errors that we do. It's why we see the errors to the degree that we do. It's a human error. That's what it is. And when something's moving as fast as some of these games, yeah, there are two to three things a game where you're like, yeah, I don't agree with that. And officials have told me, guess what? We walk into a game thinking we're probably going to have a couple of those mistakes. We no longer can sit here and say, hey, let's go out and pitch the perfect game. It's just not going to happen.
How would your friend, I say your friend, somebody you know well, because I've watched some of the interviews you've done with Danny Hurley in recent years, and they're always great. How would he feel about, well, you know, the game's just evolved and these guys are athletic and it's a really hard game to officiate? How would he handle that?
Yeah, not well, in all likelihood. Probably not well. Although, you know, the thing about Dan is, it's interesting, Kevin, and I think that this is what's really complex about Dan. Dan is tight and pretty good with a lot of the officials away from the game. So when a lot of people say to me, well, how has he not gotten thrown out, or what this behavior, like, how has he not gotten a technical? He's figured out a way to also master, the officials know his antics. They know what he does. And Kevin, that doesn't make it, I don't think that makes it right. I also think there's times when he's crossed that line and, you know, maybe they should assess an additional technical foul. Because just because you know how a coach acts doesn't mean that it makes it okay for him to act a certain way while the other coach acts a certain way. But I do think that was a thing this year.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that Dan, for how much he's accomplished over the last 2 years, you know, he's got so many more games and years left in front of him that you don't want your legacy to get hurt at all when you don't win a national championship. And I think ultimately that's what he struggled with this year. When all you've done is win the last 2 years, he had trouble accepting the reality that, hey, there's a reason why John Wooden has only done it. And oh, by the way, he did it in a very different era of basketball. That yeah, I mean, he had some line crossing type of moments. Now, I will say this, okay, that I am gonna say this.
All right.
On Sunday, when he goes in the hallway and he says to the Baylor staff, you know, I hope that they don't, you know what, to you the way that they did to us. Kevin, I don't really care about that. Like, he's in the back hallway. It was captured on video. The reporter has every right to post that. They're allowed to. I mean, we've all done, like, people that hang around there. I don't blame the reporter for doing his job one bit. He's doing his job. That being said, okay, so what? So Dan was in the hallway in the heat of the moment yelling an obscenity?
I'm totally with you on this. The heat of the battle. And by the way, that's him. And let me just say this about that game. First of all, he has become one of my favorite coaches, period, in sports to watch. He is so good. For those of you that get annoyed by Danny Hurley, that's fine in terms of your personal thoughts. He is not a good coach. He's a great coach. And that game the other day was the true definition of watching a defending champion go down swinging. I loved the effort they gave. And look, Florida went to the free throw line the entire game. So there were, yeah. I'm not saying that it was a bad whistle that UConn got, but it certainly wasn't a favorable whistle that they got. But there was no, to me, in watching UConn in that game, that's a team that you should credit if you're a basketball person and fan for the fight in that game, because that was far from a team that was a legitimate championship contender.
It's one of the best coaching performances of his career. I'm not kidding. They were a 10-point underdog. They could have gotten blown out. And there are games, Kevin, in the tournament. Jay Wright once said this to me, that's why Jay is one of the all-timers. He would say there are games in the tournament that impact the tournament that the team that won you wouldn't say that about. And I said, well, what do you mean? He's like, because at times a team and a coach finds a way to expose the team, particularly defensively, showing some defensive flaws, he goes, and then we can watch that video and say, we have been given a formula. And he goes, look, I'm not afraid to admit it. Coaches steal things from one another. You don't think that, Kevin, that material on Sunday helps Kevin Willard and Maryland survey how to face Florida and what the formula is to go up against them? You know what UConn did? UConn said, we're going to front the post. We're taking away the post. We will take away the post. If Walter Clayton and Elijah Martin are burying shots, so be it. Now, Walter Clayton came up huge. He made shot after shot, and he was
big
outstanding.
Shots.
If Florida doesn't have Walter Clayton on Sunday, they lose the game. They did not have momentum. They were down by 6 with 10 minutes to go. It looked bleak for Florida. Credit to Clayton. He's an All-American. But Connecticut, Kevin, they're weak in the post. They don't have a great front court this year. That's revealing if I'm the Terps. That is very revealing. And, you know, I think Todd Golden's done a wonderful job with his team. He had some issues off the floor earlier in the season. Those issues were worked through. And Todd has done a very nice job with his team. But he's under the age of 40. You know, he's 39. Yep. This is a new experience for him and his team. Kevin Willard's team, you know, they are very mature and poised in late-game situations. And Lord knows they've been in a bunch of them. So I'm really curious to see. But as for Hurley, he's what's good for college basketball. If you're a hater, it's the same way that people have hated, you know, the Yankees, the Chiefs, the Dodgers, the Warriors for a number of years. It's the same type of thing. You hate them because, you know, that's what you like to do. But if you don't like his behavior is the best form of reality television that we saw this past weekend.
Well, not only that, John, this is a sport that you love, that I love, but this sport has become a one-month-out-of-the-calendar sport, and it needs characters. Even if the characters are villains, the sport needs coaches and coaches with personalities because they're the constants. The players are not. I wanted to just mention one thing about that game and what you said, you know, Jay Wright, you know, explained to you. One of the things in watching that game, you know, it's not that I preferred Florida over UConn watching that game, but I thought UConn, the defensive effort, the physical way that they took it to Florida was so impressive. But they had a lot of really good looks throughout that game from behind the arc. I mean, McNeely had multiple looks early in that game where they could have had a bigger lead, and they didn't knock them down. I don't know what they were from the three-point line, but it wasn't good. And Maryland's an excellent three-point shooting team, so we'll see how Florida defends it. But let's just move to Thursday night. You know, it sounds to me like you think Maryland's got a shot. How do they do it?
Oh, they've got more than a shot, but they have to be able to negate Florida's shooting to a degree. Yes, defensively, but Kevin, Florida's going to make shots.
Yep.
Clayton and Martin aren't just going to disappear here. Will Richard, either. I think for Maryland, their front court can be better than Florida's. They've got to win the battle they have to compete on the glass. If they don't win it, they've got to even it up. It's not going to be easy. I think Florida's an outstanding offensive rebounding team. But this is why you have Julian Reese, and this is why you have Derek Queen. And this is where Queen's ability to create mismatches is really intriguing because he can catch the ball on the elbow, and it's hard to face him. I don't even know how you fully simulate that kid in the scout. He is one of one in the way that he plays the game. But all season long, we have said this, and I will say it again. When this Maryland team gets Selden Miguel and Rodney Rice going, they're a top eight team in the country, in my humble opinion. I believe they're that good. Maryland needs to keep Florida in the half court. I would want to limit Florida's offense to half court possessions. Again, easier said than done, but UConn did an elite job. You notice, Kevin, the moment Florida got slowed down in that game on Sunday, the game swayed in Connecticut's favor. If you let Florida get out in transition, it's not going to be a good day for you. But if you make them run half-court offense and you make Clayton and Martin shoot over you and you close out and hold them to one shot, you're going to win this basketball game. If Rice and Miguel show up and are hitting complimentary shots and this front court hangs in and avoids foul trouble, Maryland can do it.
All right, I've got a minute and a half left, and I've got a couple of quick questions for you. First of all, who's the best team remaining in the draw?
In the tournament, entire tournament? Duke. Duke's the best team in the country.
I agree with you. What's the game you want to see more than any other? A matchup.
Well, that's a really good question. I think that it would be fascinating to see. Well, I think Auburn-Duke, a rematch in the title game, would be outstanding. I also think this weekend, I'm going to go with Kentucky and Houston in an Elite Eight game, because I think Big Blue Nation would make Lucas Oil Stadium a home. And could you imagine, Kevin, Mark Pope in year one taking Kentucky to the Final Four?
No.
And facing Duke. And facing Duke in the Final Four.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
That'd be unbelievable.
I'd love to see a Duke-Houston rematch in the Final Four from last year with a healthy Houston team. All right, I got literally 30 seconds. Kevin Willard stays or goes?
I think that he's going to stay, because I just think that Maryland has backed up the truck in every single way. I think they're willing to give him, you know, whatever he wants. If you're asking me, I do believe that he'll stay at Maryland.
You're the best. Thanks for doing this. I've got Kevin Willard coming up next. John, I'll talk to you soon. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks so much, Kevin. I've never been a worst opener for an act.
Stop it. You're not the opener. You are the act. And he should have been on before you. Thanks, John.
Tell him who he's following. Make sure you tell him who he's following.
Yeah, he knows. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. At John_Fant on X, the head basketball coach of Maryland, Kevin Willard, next.
Terps are down by one. And Gillespie looks to inbound. There it goes to Queen. Queen will drive in against Morton. Queen with a shot off the glass. Got it! And the Pelicans have won it! At the buzzer on a shot! Oh, my goodness! By Derrick Queen! 72-71, and we're heading to San Francisco! It's about time! Wow! How about that? Man, oh, man, oh, man.
Johnny and Naki on the call Sunday in Seattle is heard right here on your home for Maryland basketball, the Team 980. The head coach of Maryland is Kevin Willard. He's back with us. All right, take us inside the huddle with 3.7 seconds left. We've heard, you know, your explanation. Did you really just look around and say, who wants to take the last shot?
Yeah, Kev. I mean, sometimes it's interesting. Like, I have four guys that have never played in an NCAA tournament game. And, you know, to be in that situation, you know, sometimes you have to read body language. You have to kind of see how guys are playing throughout the whole game. And I just, you know, I told the guys, I said, guys, all right, I'm not losing another buzzer beater. I said, I've had enough. I said, so we have our chance now. I said, we haven't had a chance in the last four games that we've lost because of buzzer beaters. I said, now it's our time. And I said, everybody take a deep breath. I said, who wants the ball? And I looked around, and Derek, he just said, give me the M&F ball. And everyone kind of looked at me and kind of said, yep, give him the ball. And I said, all right, let's go out there and do it. Like, no messing around. Let's go out there. I said, I don't want any of that. Nothing fancy there, big fella. Just go out there and just get a bucket. And he looked at me and said, I got you. And that was it.
If, just hypothetically, if nobody had stepped up, if he hadn't stepped up and said it, what would you have run?
Somebody.
Oh, come on. What was in your mind before he stepped up and said, give me the MF ball?
Well, I have a play card that has, on the back, I have there's like, it's six scenarios, and they've been the same plays really for the whole year. So I kind of knew that if depending on what side of the floor we call timeout on is usually how I'll run a play. And, you know, because I think we were a little bit shocked that the guy made the shot, Selton was bringing the ball up on the right side of the floor. So when we called timeout, my original thought process was to give it to Rodney because Rodney's really good going left and taking a step back jumper, which I thought we had plenty of time for. But once Derek said that he wanted it and the way he said it and the way those guys reacted to him, it almost like it gave them the confidence. It was just a no-brainer.
I thought it was funny when he said he had never hit a game winner before. And you said, well, I wouldn't have given you the last shot. But he's still a great option. And by the way, getting him the ball where you got him the ball, we've watched all season long. I mean, him in the middle of the floor at the free throw line or free throw line extended is such a comfortable spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I knew that they had the transfer from Purdue guarding him. I forget his name, number 25.
Yeah.
And he's a heck of a defender. But at the end of the day, Derek's a legit 7 foot now. And Heidi, I think, is like 6'7". It was just a kind of simple thing. Just try to get downhill. And he's either going to get fouled or he's going to get a good shot at the bucket.
You know, I noticed something about you because I've only watched the play about 100 times at this point. You watched the final possession standing from the very end of your bench, not anywhere near your seat or the coaching box or midcourt. Why that spot, that angle to watch the final play?
I didn't want to. Two reasons. I want to make sure Selton and Derek did what they were supposed to do on the baseline. The play is designed for Selton to go over top of Derek and then Derek to go and then Juju pinned down. So I just wanted to make sure that Selton went over top. And then in that situation, I didn't want to be in Jacoby's way or vision. I just wanted Jacoby to focus on the play. So for me being down there, I was able to help Selton and Derek kind of just in that situation, you know, although we've run that play and they know the play, just to give them a little bit more confidence and guidance.
I want to get to the defensive possession before that in a moment, but after the three by Lake, your team looked very prepared. No timeout, you had one left, but 6.1 seconds left. The ball comes in, Selton takes it across half court, calls your last timeout. Was that an end of game situation that you've practiced?
Yeah, I would. It happened pretty quick, but they took the shot. They took the shot earlier than I thought they did. If they had made that shot with 3 seconds or
you would have called.
I would have called timeout immediately. But you have so many more plays. At least I do. I have so many more plays in my playbook from a half court standpoint than I do a full court. And I think it's easier to defend a team full court than it is in the half court.
Interesting. We are talking to Kevin Willard. So the defensive possession before it, the three from Lake, you had a foul to give. What was the plan defensively? Because you had a huddle. They had called the timeout with 12 seconds.
So we talked about fouling, and really my mistake was, you know, I talked mostly with Rodney and Jacoby because we were going to come out and play zone. We had played zone the prior possession and worked really good. That we got them to call a timeout. We defended their stuff really well. And so I talked mostly to Rodney and Jacoby thinking that if they run a zipper play and get the ball up above the three-point line, we were going to foul. We didn't want to foul below the three-point line because kids nowadays are so smart that they, you know, if you reach in below, they're going to go up and they're going to try to do the NBA thing and get a foul. So when they went right to the post on Selton, you know, we didn't want to foul right there. You know, it just below the three-point line.
Yeah.
Nico has
with Clifford backing him down.
Well, he also has 7,000 underneath out-of-bounds plays.
Right.
And it's easier to get a three on an underneath out-of-bounds play than it is on a sideline out-of-bounds play. So below the three-point line, if we fouled, it would have went to an underneath out-of-bounds play. And I've never seen a guy have more underneath out of bounds play than they had. So that's kind of why we talked about fouling above the 3-point line, but it never got there. They just went right into the post.
God, that is so interesting. Just the idea that the scout is so deep that you know he's got so many underneath his basket inbounds plays, it's easier to get a three where you lose on a three, and if you foul him there, the ball goes to the baseline as an inbound spot rather than to the sideline. We're talking to Kevin Willard. Real quickly on that last, you know, possession, you had played, why did you play more zone? You know, in watching you, a lot of your zone turns into man during the possession itself as the shot clock winds down. Sometimes it's a matchup. Why did you play more zone in this game? Was it, what were the reasons?
Colorado State, we counted the night we beat Grand Canyon. We watched film that night, and we counted in the game against Memphis, and Memphis did a good job of pressuring them. We counted 32 different sets that they had run, or 32 different options out of their sets. And to try to prepare for all that and do all that, you know, one of the things you can do with zone a little bit is at least it takes them out of their full playbook. And that's why we played a little bit more zone. It wasn't effective, but at least we didn't have to guard all their stuff.
Do you think that one of the things I was going to ask you about specific to not only Sunday, but even Friday against Grand Canyon and certainly the semifinal in the Big Ten tournament against Michigan is the number of offensive rebounds you guys have been giving up. What are the issues that have led to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, we talked about that as a team yesterday. We have switched a little bit more than, you know, Michigan makes you switch a little bit more. Obviously Colorado, we had to switch, you know, 1 through 4. And I think a little bit is that we had some bad mismatches on our switches. We have guards, you know, we had guards on Wolf. We had guards on, some of their big guys against Colorado State. And it's become a little bit of an issue where it's been bad game planning by me by getting our guards switched on to some bigger guys. So, you know, we can't do that against Florida. Their Florida size is just so big. So we're going to go back to doing a little bit what we did in the beginning of the year and just stay a little bit more at home.
First half of the game Sunday, Neat Clifford, who, by the way, is an incredible player.
He's really good.
Yeah. He threw a blatant elbow that connected with Jordan Geronimo. Why didn't they look at it? When did you find out about it? Take me through that situation.
I told Jordan, I said, man, you gotta lay on the floor a little bit longer. I said, you gotta sell that. I saw it at halftime. Like, you know, again, they didn't review it, which was, we had a really good reffing crew. It was one of the best three guys that you could put on a game. And they came up to me at halftime and said, you know what, we saw it, we missed it, we apologize. And you know what, Kevin, sometimes they just miss stuff. You know, the good thing was, you know, Jordan wasn't hurt, and, you know, it's one of those plays. Sometimes refs miss stuff, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah, it just was a critical moment because I think it was a 3 or 5-point game. You get 2 free throws on the ball. During the regular season, people probably would have been talking about a flagrant 2, but it more likely than not would have been a flagrant 1. I was just curious as to when you found out and whether or not had the conversation.
You know, the instant replay at home is so much different. You know, you see that stuff automatically. Like,
sure.
You know, our video guys do such a good job at home that after every play, it's up on the Jumbotron. You know, at the NCAA tournament, they don't do that. So you don't get to see it as quickly as you do during the regular season, which is a little bit of a disadvantage.
All right. First time for you in the Sweet 16, first time for the program in 9 years. How do you balance, you know, for your team, the excitement of the finish, of advancing to the Sweet 16, but also not treating it like, you know, Thursday night ends up becoming icing on the cake?
No, I mean, I let them, you know, yesterday was a travel day. You know, we went from, I've been on the West Coast so long, I think I should pay taxes on the West Coast.
You mean you didn't have to bus it home and then hitchhike back out?
No, we traveled to San Fran yesterday, and I gave the guys yesterday was a rinse day for me. Like I let them enjoy it. We did a lot of media. The guys did a lot of media. We watched film. We did a walkthrough on Florida, but for the most part, I just gave them yesterday to kind of enjoy the win. I wanted them to embrace it. I want them to, this group has been phenomenal coach and so much fun to coach. I think you have to celebrate your success, but at the same time today, I told them last night, I'm like, guys, we're getting back up today, and they were all business. You know, they understood it. I think they appreciated the fact that I didn't grind them yesterday, and I just gave them a day to be kids and enjoy winning a buzzer beater in March Madness.
All right, I got to ask you this. Are you staying at Maryland or going?
Yeah. You know what? I've had, over the last week, I know I've said some things that have raised people's eyes, but, Maryland's been great. We're in a perfect shape. I missed a radio show today, and everybody thinks, I missed a radio show today because I overslept. I'm on West Coast time now. Everything that my concerns have been about the job, and that was my whole point of my press conference, and maybe my jersey came out of me not in the greatest way, was I want to make this program the best, and I think when you have an opportunity to do it, you have to take advantage of the opportunity, Kevin. Obviously losing the athletic director has been a little bit of a, I wouldn't say it's been a little hard, to be honest with you, just because I wasn't expecting Damon to leave and go to SMU. But I've been working with Brian Ullman and everyone in the athletic department, and they've been great, and they understood my concerns and what I want. And again, I don't want monumental things. I just want this program to be the best it can be, and I think I'm not asking for that much.
So, are you staying?
As of right now, I'm staying, Kev, yes.
As of right now, but are you going to get the things that – are you comfortable right now saying that you're going to get the things you need and you are going to be at Maryland as the head coach next year and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and Brian Ullman has been phenomenal. He's actually the first guy that's come up to me. One of my issues is I just didn't have a great –
tell everybody who Brian is.
Brian's it's the CEO. I'm not sure what his title is. He's in the athletic department, and he's way up there. There's a lot of people up there. Jeff.
Okay, just so everybody knows. Yeah.
But he's been great. He's the first guy that's actually sat down with me, talked to me, and really found out what my concerns and what I really wanted, because it's not a contractual thing for me. It's more of a program thing for me. And Brian and I are on the same page. He has been awesome. He has put a lot of what I've felt over the last 3 years about the program. I think he's finally starting to understand where I want this program to go. And that's all that matters to me. I want this, what Lefty did, what Gary did, what Mark did, what I want to try to do is elevate this program to the best. It's what our fans want. It's what my donors want. They talk about it all the time. It's what I want. It's what my expectations are. And when you're at a place like Maryland, there's just certain things that need to be done to be at the top of college basketball. And I can tell you that I don't know if Brian's trying to get the AD job, but Brian's been phenomenal.
Last week, and I think we all talked about it, anybody that does what I do, we talked about your comments. I personally love them for a lot of different reasons. I'm not going to go into them now. And it was some of the jersey and you coming out, which, some of us like. But I'm curious to some of the specifics you mentioned, but were they the biggies? Like right now, the top two or three things that you really need to make Maryland what you want Maryland to be and what people like me want Maryland to be, the ability to compete at the highest levels of the sport, what are those things?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, obviously we're the fans don't really understand this, but we're entering into a whole new era of profit sharing, of literally schools paying players. I think the Big Ten, the SEC have done a good job of trying to move away from collectives and donors paying to schools paying. And you know, with a football program, with a really good women's program, with a phenomenal lacrosse soccer program, you know, I don't want to take away from those programs, but at the same time, in men's basketball, you know, there's schools out there that are going to be able to do things that we can't do. So, I don't want someone telling me, especially since I don't have an athletic director, I don't want someone telling me that we're going to do it. I want to put in my contract. I don't want people making decisions about my program who aren't involved in my program, that make decisions that affect my staff's life, my life, but doesn't affect their life. So those are big ones for me because, you know, I live it, breathe it every single day. And again, you know, I want this place to be the best. As you know, this fan base expects that. But it, you know, to be perfectly honest, it hasn't been treated that way for a long time. And my goal is to get it there.
Yeah, I think that's really important what Kevin said for all the Maryland fans listening, because I think the perception from a lot of us and from a lot of the fans is that Maryland is a very high-level program, and certainly from a history and tradition standpoint, it's true, but we're in a different era of, you know, of players getting paid. And your answer there specifically was, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, about the share of the revenue that goes to basketball.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, the funny thing is if you brought any basketball coach on right now that's in the Big Ten, the SEC, Big 12, really, I think those three schools, I think the ACC is a little bit unique because they have a much diversified basketball, football mix. But most of all of us are sitting there saying, okay, wait a second, like, It's nice that you're saying this is what we're getting, but then at the end of the day, are we getting that? And, you know, the transfer portal is crazy. There's kids asking for $2-3 million right now. And the money has exploded crazy because we have no guardrails. We have no rules. It's been as badly implemented of a rule as ever in any sport. And kids and agents are taking advantage of it. You know, every player has an agent. Every agent is calling every school and saying, hey, you know, I got $1.2 million here. Give me $1.4 and we're gone. And, you know, if you don't have this profit share in the rev, you're not going to be able to compete. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, and yet you did a phenomenal job last offseason because there were opportunities for some of those players to take more money elsewhere, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I do think, again, and that's kind of where I stand a little bit on the transfer portal. You know, we talked to a bunch of guys yesterday when the portal opened. You know, it's like, all right, we'll be there. We'll be in the same range, but, you know, we also want guys that want to be at Maryland, that want to, that fit what we're trying to do, that are still great kids, that have great work ethics, that want to be around the staff, that wants to get you better. So that's still a big part of the sell for me, is that I just don't want to go out there and just say, here's $2 million and just bring someone in that doesn't fit our culture, that doesn't fit what we're building, that doesn't fit with the guys that we have returning. So it is a big part of that. And the guys that came last year were all into that. They, you know, they wanted to experience what they're experiencing right now. So there is a balance, but unfortunately, agents have really just taken over the sport.
All right. How do you beat Florida Thursday night?
Well, they have a young man named Walter Clayton who is as good a guard as I've seen in a long time. I mean, he's shoots 38% from three and takes almost 50% of them off the dribble, off pick and rolls. You know, we're going to switch up our pick and roll coverage. We have to. We just can't play the way we've been playing. And we have to do a much better job on the glass. We have to do a better job on the defensive glass and transition defense. They're a really good team. They're ranked second in the country for a reason. It's going to be a great test for us.
Best of luck. Appreciate you doing this. You know how much I enjoy our conversations. Thursday night will be a lot of fun, and I think a lot of people are hoping, and it sounds like it will be the first of your many Sweet 16s and beyond at the University of Maryland.
I appreciate it, Kev. I'm glad I didn't oversleep for you so everyone didn't get in a frenzy.
Appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kev.
Kevin Willard, everybody, head coach at Maryland. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com, or free and live on the Odyssey app. Robbie Hummel, who was on the call of Maryland's game Sunday, and a lot of the calls of Maryland games during the course of the year, will join us at 12. We just had Kevin Willard on the show, and he said, as of now, I'm staying at Maryland, and said that he believes that, you know, he can get the things he's been asking for, and that Brian Ullman, the CEO of the athletic department, has been great, phenomenal, I think was his quote, in working with him through conversations about what he wants for the program. You know, I've mentioned this the last couple of shows. I know that there have been, for you Maryland fans that are following the story, there's been a lot out there, and it's kind of gone back and forth. You know, over the weekend, seemed like he was staying. Then the last couple of days, there's been a lot of stuff that would indicate he's leaving. But you heard him say it, that he's feeling better about the situation. And as of now, he's staying at Maryland, and we'll see. I want him to stay. Kevin Willard is perfect for Maryland. He's just got to get what a lot of us and a lot of fans have thought for years they were getting anyway, which is more of the money and more of the emphasis for the program at the university, which is most important to fans and alums, period. You know what my favorite part of that conversation was? Was him explaining that last defensive possession of the game when they gave up the three, that when the ball went into the post, when Clifford had the ball in the post, they wanted to foul, they were going to take a foul, but on the perimeter, not in the post, where then, after the foul, they had, as in they, Colorado State, so many great inbounds plays from underneath their own basket, and it's much easier to get a three-point attempt from that inbounds position than it is from the sideline position. So that's why they decided not to foul him there. Now, unfortunately, they found a three-point shooter against the zone who caught it and got off a wide-open look for the three anyway. But, you know, when we do this after games, especially during football season, and I've said this, even though I will be demonstrative in my opinions about certain things, but there's so much that we don't know, that we just don't have a clue as to what they know and what they're thinking. That was really, I thought, pretty interesting insight from Kevin Willard. Kevin is, you know, a Jersey guy. He is, I think, perfect for Maryland, which used to be a school of a lot of Jersey and Long Island and South Jersey kids. And there are a ton of alums from that part of the world. Anyway, hope this gets resolved sooner rather than later, and can't wait to watch them. I think they got a legit shot on Thursday against Florida. We'll ask Robbie Hummel next what he thinks of Maryland's chances against Florida when we come back. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. Download the Odyssey app. You can listen to us wherever you go, whenever you want.